What's my name? Fuck you! That's my name! Hello, and welcome to episode 168 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other desperate middle-aged white men as masterpieces. I am Nick. I am the sweary, down-on-his-luck, sad-sack, schlubby salesman of the podcast. And I am joined, as ever, by Roger.
I came here in an $80,000 BMW. That's who I am.
We are discussing 1992's possible masterpiece, David Mamet's playwright, which then became a film, Glengarry Glen Ross.
We should say, although every episode is tagged as potentially a bit sweary, this is potentially going to be quite sweary.
Well, this film was dubbed by people in the know as Death of a Fucking Salesman.
I think that's pretty much what the cast came up with when they saw the script.
Yes, yeah. So, a bit of history with this film in that it was marketed as a comedy drama, or at least it was around my parts. And so, consequently, I sat through it with my nan when I was 10 and watched Al Pacino very, very grumpily call Kevin Spacey, "You cunt, you cocksucker, you..." It was a very, very awkward watch. If there is comedy in this film, I suppose you could find it funny rather than depressing, but I don't think so. I don't know what kind of mindset would find it a comedy. That's not to prejudge the film. I suspect Roger and I have different opinions on it, but I would really struggle to see much funny about this film.
So, yeah, this is a 1983 play by Mamet again. Mm. Not exactly the same structure, but very close. And pretty much, I mean, it won a Pulitzer for drama in 84. And pretty much from that point on, it was likely to become a film at some point. And it was really only a matter of who would buy the rights first. And it's a bunch of people I've frankly never heard of, so fair enough. They got James Foley to direct, whom, again, I haven't heard of. He apparently did a lot of collaborations with Madonna on music videos in the 80s. He has made a few films, some of which I've even heard of, but he's not, I would say, a big-name director.
I think this was not... the studios weren't keen on this because of the subject matter
and
the
swearing.
Degree of profanity.
Yeah.
Within it, so it was.
They got money from cable TV stations,
right?
That sort of thing. It was actually a pretty low budget production.
I do think it was already the play was already Pulitzer Prize winning by the time they filmed.
The prize was the year after the release of the play, so 1984,
right?
And that's before they'd even really got going on the selling the rights and the production and so on, but it certainly made it more likely to happen.
Oh, I should mention, as with our last episode, it's still hotter than the surface of the sun. Consequently, I have my window open. Roger is outside. There will be traffic noise, I'm afraid, in this.
Mm-hmm.
But probably suits the film in this case.
So, I mean, we probably ought to talk about Mamet. He's a pro-Friedrich Hayek economist. All the underpinnings of the market is God that are ruining the world today. He's pro-gun, he's pro-Trump, he's pro-Israel, whatever it does, and anyone who doesn't agree with everything Israel does is anti-Semitic. He's a 2020 election denier. I mean, it's all there.
Now, I wondered, because Mamet wrote this play in his 30s, and I wondered if... he would have mellowed or changed over time, and whether he may have become more
He seems to have gone very hardline in the early 2000s, but yeah.
So he's actually become much more interesting. Here's okay. So the play is about it's about desperate middle class white guys, and it really is about them and pretty much no one else, and about the kind of the horror of capitalism and hucksterism and as this is how I read it, I have to say, listening to David Mamet's subsequent biography, it makes me feel that he admires these guys. In fact, I have a quote from an online essay about Glengarry Glen Ross, which is about David Mamet specifically. He knows his characters are vile cowards on some level, but he's also smitten by these sons of bitches. The 30-something mammoth who wrote Glengarry Glen Ross was probably the kind of guy easily impressed by cheap displays of machismo, and his creations reflect his infatuation with limp-dicked power plays between soft-boiled alphas. I think that kind of covers a lot of this film, actually, in that what I assume to be a kind of parody and a comment on the kind of patheticness of the power play and cannibalism between these kind of also rans, I assumed that this was a comment on how pointless it all was and what absolute nonsense and depressing it was. But, you know, listening to what Mamet has subsequently gone on to do and think, it makes me wonder, no, is he actually... Does he think these are virtues in some way? I don't quite... How do you read it, then? Sorry, well, I've gone right into the depth
no,
of it.
No, I mean, I agree it's a consideration. One of the summaries I found was, you know, the play explores themes of capitalism, morality, and masculinity. But basically everybody we meet takes the same position, that this is what you do.
Yes.
And you can do it better, and that's good, or you can do it worse, and that's bad. But fundamentally, it is a rat-eat-rat world. And,
yes.
And all you can hope for is to be the biggest rat. So... I think that's a problem in terms of actually exploring a theme, because, you know, nobody here is saying, well, what if we did it differently?
And yeah, that, we never, you know, get they, to see another point of view.
They could then succeed or fail or whatever. But, you know, nobody here is particularly better than anybody else. They will all screw each other for a deal. They are all Carter Burke, basically.
Yes, I mean, what they are, to just... I mean, we don't have to go into the plot too much, honestly. It is very much a play in that it's sort of three act, really, and basically it's a bunch of conversational scenes, one after another. But these characters are all salesmen. What they're selling is not entirely clear, except it's some shitty property, basically swampland or something like that, that they're trying to get...
Yeah, it's not explicitly fraudulent, but one can't help feeling that if it were an actual investment opportunity, they wouldn't need to resort to the... frank deception that they do. So.
They do, and they're clearly con artists in some... In fact, they do a con later in the film. What they're desperate for is leads, which I guess mean new suckers to sell this shitty stuff.
Yeah, it's basically somebody's address and phone number.
Yeah, but they are people who they think might fall for this shit, because obviously they burnt all the other people. It's like traveling salesman moving from town to town. You know, you pull a con... Then you have to get out of town and do it again. Well, this is the equivalent, is getting these new leads. They're told...
One of them is it Levine talks about, you know, in the old days, there was this wonderful thing, and you could get a little bit out of a whole lot of people. But,
yes.
but the big guys insisted on getting a lot out of a whole lot of people, and so those people didn't come back to put in more sucker money later.
Yeah, so he's lamenting that, again, not the... he's not lamenting the idea of it, or that these people were suckered out of money, just that it doesn't work as well, and he has to get more suckers. So, I mean, we just talked about, on a previous film, we talked about an ensemble cast. I mean, this is quite an ensemble cast as well. We have
several
Lemon,
actors I have a lot of time for.
Yeah, I think the acting is stellar in this. Alec Baldwin, Alan Arkin, Ed Harris, Kevin Spacey, Jonathan Pryce. I mean, they are all fine actors. All of them, I think. I have a lot of time for all of those. Again, Kevin Spacey, maybe less so, given personal revelations, but I think there's no doubt he's a fine actor.
Officially not guilty, so we wouldn't want to be thought of saying anything libelous.
Yes, of course, definitely not guilty.
But I feel I should point out, there is one female cast member. She does not appear on screen.
Does she have a speaking? No, she doesn't. Okay.
She does not get a name. She has one line.
Well, so
she's the coat check girl when they're leaving the restaurant.
My take on that, which again may be overly generous, is it's because to these... So the guys are the setup is they have got to... at the end of the week, the top salesman gets a Cadillac, the second gets some steak knives, everyone else gets fired. And so it adds this... huge pressure on this already high pressure job.
That, incidentally, is not in the play.
No, this is Alec Baldwin's memorable "fuck you, that's my name" character.
The part was written specifically for him, in fact.
And he does a great job with it. I think he is, you know, he sets himself up as more of a turd than we were talking about Ocean's 11 last time. Much better than Andy Garcia's character does. You know, he does the kicking the cat straight away. But then...
Well, the thing I find interesting is these guys are obviously supposed to want to be him. He is the example of success down from head office to motivate them.
Mm.
And I think to some extent it works.
I think they all do want to be him. And that, again, I perhaps generously read this as, God, I mean, this is the idea of a successful one of these guys, and he is awful. Why would any of them want to do it? Perhaps I read it too generously. But yeah, the setup is they've got to do it. Then someone breaks into the office. We see the break-in being planned between two of the characters. Someone breaks into the office, steals the lead, and I think the
good
the title
leads
of
that,
the film,
that aren't being handed out.
I think what they're selling are Glengarry. I think that's the thing they're selling is the Glengarry leads.
Well,
they're
not selling it yet. These are the leads that are thought of as good that are being kept back for this particular new development.
It's interesting as to what they think of as good. Presumably these are suckers who have been nowhere near any of the other leads, and so they have no idea what a scam this whole thing is.
Mm.
Presumably, how else they think they're good, I don't know. I guess they're just clean. I mean, that's most of the plot, and then we sort of spend a bit of time with all of the salesmen and discover how variously horrible they all are. Really, I mean, it is. It's very reminiscent of Raging Bull. We called that toxic masculinity, the movie. Well, this is that again, really. It's a different form of toxic masculinity.
Apart from that one moment, there is no interaction with women, but, you know, all suckers are suckers.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just the kind of... What I find compelling about it, I think, honestly, is partly just the sheer... It's a play. I mean, it's not realistic acting. It's not really believable. It really does feel like a play, but I find well-written dialogue acted well. I find that compelling, and so I found it interesting to follow their cons and their schemes, and just they all, as you say, they all buy into this. They're variably good at it, though I feel like the lie behind it all is, ultimately, it doesn't really matter how good you are or not. Sometimes you're just lucky and someone wants to buy some, sometimes you aren't, but they have to sort of mythologize it and make you into a legend. You're the machine because you've sold this. But ultimately, a lot of it is just pure luck. But they're being all alpha male about it, and they turn it into this competition.
Let's just footnote that even the people who originally coined the term alpha male in the widely misunderstood and misquoted study were explicitly, no, that's not how it works, when idiots started trying to reuse it.
Okay, but these guys all think they're alpha males in that sense, of the misread sense.
Williamson, who's the office manager, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, he
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, and he is quite happy to screw somebody else over.
No one chose any...
For no benefit to himself at all, just because he can.
Yeah, he just said, I don't like you. You know, even Jack Lemmon, you know, the classic everyman character, very likable in almost every other film. Here he's kind of alternately smug and unpleasant, or whiny and unpleasant.
there is supposed to be, and this is apparently pumped up somewhat from the play, you know, supposedly his daughter is in hospital and he's having trouble paying for her treatment, whatever it is, because America. But I think that is meant to be humanizing for him, but frankly, if it had been completely a scam to get people to sympathize with him, you wouldn't have had to change any lines at all.
No, I think they were right not to play it up, because in a way, it doesn't matter their reasons. You know, their behaviour is just so unpleasant. I'd say it's so sweary. They're so Smith. So Al Pacino's character, Ricky, Rocky, he's like the the up-and-coming guy, he's the one on his luck. But you know, you know that he's going to end up like Levine at some point. He's going to be this has-been, and it's half luck. You know, even the sale that he conned someone into, Jonathan Pryce's character, the one sort of sole human, I suppose, in the cast, is trying to wriggle out of this deal, and then you see all the horrible tricks that Al Pacino has to basically wait until the time has passed so he can't wriggle out of it anymore and to fool him into doing it. And that's when we get Jack Lemmon and Al Pacino do this little con in front of them. I find the kind of the clickety clack of it, the movement, the play itself, I just find that, much like when I watched The Tempest, I guess, I enjoy that kind of tightly written scenes, moving you through the plot, and just well acted and compelling. So I did enjoy watching the film much more than I did when I watched it with me Nan.
I found the conversations reminded me actually a lot of what Tarantino would start doing some years later. That whole,
right,
it's fast moving, it's back and forth, without the pop culture references, obviously.
Yes.
But in both cases, I think it's the dialogue of someone who believes that anything he writes is endlessly fascinating and would be endlessly fascinating if spoken by somebody.
Yes. I mean, I would kind of agree that a lot of it is fascinating, but I agree. The other way, I guess, it's similar to Tarantino. That's a good observation in the sense that Tarantino is incredible at this tension that then explodes into violence, which that doesn't happen physical violence with Glengarry Glen Ross, but it does kind of, you get this kind of moments of emotional violence of people just suddenly kind of just lashing out at each other and just being horrible. And the tension builds, and then they just, I mean, not a lot of tension builds in Glengarry Glen Ross, because they're all very ready to call each other twats or fuckers or cunts or whatever very quickly on.
And they do largely seem to mean it. I mean, there is a certain baseline level of casual insult, which, you know, is a thing that does happen in friend groups. But the moment any of them sees any virtue in undermining somebody else, he's right there doing it.
Exactly, so. Yeah. And the closest you get to comradeship is between Al Pacino, who clearly seems to respect Levine as this older salesman who has had his day. But even there, you know that Levine would undercut his character in any way to get an advantage. And Al Pacino, Ricky Roma, he's called, his character is on the up now, so he can afford to be slightly generous and kind. But if he was on his down, if he hadn't made a sale in a month or two, he would treat all the others just the same.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, that is I completely agree, that's a flaw in it, in that they're all the same personality type. And they're also the type of character that, unfortunately, you don't have to delve too deeply into the train wreck that is X, previously Twitter, to find that kind of personality type who just enjoys being unpleasant or finds a virtue in it and seems only happy when someone else is down. You know, happiness is a zero-sum game, and that seems to be the way it is with a lot of people on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, nobody has ever put me in charge of running a sales department, and this is probably a very good thing, but the thing that always strikes me is, why have you got these guys competing against each other?
Yes.
Why can't they compete against all those other companies that are trying to sell the same thing? Why can't they help each other a bit sometimes? And they actually do that a bit here when it's free to do so.
Well, they do that because it only manages them.
Yeah, but only when they think they're ahead, because they need to be in the top two out of four so as not to get fired.
You get the impression that's a limited and very short-term thing.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't know why it has to be this kind of alpha male competition. I keep saying alpha male because that's clearly what they all think they are.
Yeah, just insert quote marks around it each time.
Yeah. They're all this kind of... I mean, I'm not sure there's much more to say other than basically it's these very similar characters with very... You know, Alan Arkin's character is basically not cut out for it, but he still tries. It's not that he doesn't think there's something wrong with it. He's just not ruthless enough or horrible enough to be quite as horrible as the others. Ed Harris, again, basically being Ed Harris in this film. He's very good at being Ed Harris. And Al Pacino, again, I know he's supposed to be one of the greatest actors of all time, and he is very intense and very good, but he's still basically being Al Pacino. I think Jack Lemmon was, you know, really playing against type and is very good at being that kind of, you know, instead of this kind of sympathetic everyman, is this, he's really good at getting across that he's, he is past it. You know, we talked about facial acting recently, but, you know, you see in his face the desperation, the smugness when he's up, and that kind of grit, that kind of shit-eating grin he does when he thinks he's got one over on the office manager, and how quickly he turns into kind of pathetic salesman. You can see why he fails, because he just, you can see through him. I thought he does a phenomenal job of acting. Again, Kevin Spacey, I think, is very good in it too.
Yeah,
but they're all very good.
There is a bit where Levine is trying to bribe Williamson to get access to some of the good leads. And the way I read this, possibly I'm overreading it, is that Williamson never has any intention of actually letting him have them, but he's just stringing him along. So they say, oh yeah, give me 20% of your commission. Oh yeah, he's agreed to that. He's desperate. Okay, it's time to shut this down and give me $50 up front, because I know you don't have it.
Yeah, and he's doing that because he kind of wants to see Levine squirm, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Again, that's how I would read it too.
Yeah.
So, on the one hand, I mean, that's basically the whole film. I mean,
I got 15 minutes in and I hated all of these people individually.
I think that is fair. And I would, to be honest, worry about you if you didn't. It is just a kind of these people put in a bag and left to fight. But there's no prize other than the Cadillac and it's really disturbed me, your description of Mehmet, from the start, because I feel like I would read that as, look at this. This is a vision of hell. Why would anyone ever want to either work in this or be associated with it? Why would you feel any of this was of any interest to anything? To me, I look at that as something has gone wrong with our world where this sort of thing can happen. But I don't get that. That impression from David Mamet.
Yeah, with a disclaimer that I am not a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright.
Yes.
I feel that the story would work better if there were any sign that there is an alternative to this. You know, somebody other than a Mark is in from outside and saying, well, no, we do it this way.
Yeah.
And then you could have the characters variously reacting and saying, well, no, I like it the way it is, or I can't survive out there actually being nice to, or whatever. But there isn't that. There is just this is the way it is. This is the way
relentless.
It is.
Even the Alan Arkin character, who is almost the closest. Well, Jonathan Pryce, I suppose. But even his character is just a sucker.
Yeah, he is just a sucker.
That's all they think of him. I didn't fully develop my thought, but, you know, there are, as you say, there's no women, there's no children. Those kind of creatures, and I use the term in the way that I feel like the characters would think of them, they just don't exist in this world. All they are is things to be either ignored or worked round or abused.
Obstacles, prizes, tools.
Yeah. And I guess I would be generously reading that as, well, that's deliberate because we're showing what absolute arseholes and these people are. And not that children and women can't be arseholes as well, but there's something very masculine about the type of arsehole they are, because it's toxic masculinity. And again, women and children can display toxic masculinity.
I think part of the problem is that we just don't see anything that these people might think about other than getting the sale. I mean,
yeah,
they presumably do have interior lives. At least one of them is married.
yes.
Must have said something to impress somebody once, but we never meet any of that.
And
again,
one
that makes it hard for me to
get
a handle on them.
Williamson says, I didn't file it. I went home and stayed home with the kids and spent time with the kids, which he... I don't know. You don't know whether he thinks of that as a virtue or whether he's annoyed that he did that. But that is an allusion to someone.
I taught them to play Monopoly.
I mean, I'm not sure I want to spend much time thinking or talking about the people. I found it a compelling play, as I often do with well-written. I do think it's well-written, tight plays, brilliantly acted. I found it compelling, and I enjoy it on that level. But I'm going to confess you've totally blown me away with the Man of Mystery.
I will concede well written, but I hated it.
I think you're right. I'm not sure why I had an absolute reaction to Raging Bull, which again is well written, well acted. I just didn't want to spend any time with Jake LaMotta at all. I just didn't want to. I think maybe because it's shorter and quicker. I don't know why I don't have the same reaction, because everything we're saying, I feel like I should. In fact, in some ways, I abhor this more because
it sneaks under your defences.
This kind of thinking seems to have taken over the world. You know, some of the most powerful people in the world are this kind of person now.
All they can do is see everything in terms of a zero-sum competition. I win, therefore you lose, and vice versa.
Exactly. And so, I don't know. I'm struggling to justify why I enjoyed it, you know, in that context. Because I think, honestly, I feel as you do. I hate all these people. I generously felt this is a comment on all of that and a cautionary tale.
It could be. I mean, it's certainly not going to make anybody say, oh, I want to be a salesman like that.
But then neither is Raging Bull. I don't think you're supposed to look at that and think, Jake LaMotta was a nice guy. I wish I could be more like him. Mm. So I don't know. I don't know why I'm different about those films. But ultimately, I think you've convinced me that it's a depressing...
Well, I mean, some of my reaction is, as you say, a reaction to the present day as well, so...
Yeah.
Might not have been as relevant at the time.
Well, I mean, is it a masterpiece? No, I think it's a play on film. And it really feels like that. So I don't know that there's anything new about the... I mean, the acting quality is... It's stellar.
Mm. Yep. But... And I don't think there have been a lot of imitations of it. I mean, all right, there are not that many Pulitzer Prize-winning plays in the first place, but I don't think it started off a new subgenre or anything like that.
No, it didn't. And as you say, it didn't cost much, didn't make much either. And so I think
it's one of those cases where a big-name actor will take a pay cut to work on it because it's this guy... Yeah, great literary credibility and so on. Fair enough.
Sort of not quite a vanity project, something you can afford to do because you're doing well. But it was a bit of a flop, as I recall. It's still going now. There's revivals of it now as a stage play. Well, there we are.
And at least some versions of the stage play do actually put the Alec Baldwin scene back in, so...
I wonder if, because, as you say, that the play itself is kind of amoral in the sense it doesn't, talking it through, it doesn't really sort of come to a judgment on these characters. So I have sort of projected my own feeling of it onto that, and then felt it was some sort of moral fable. But maybe it isn't that at all. Maybe you have shaken me with Mamet.
Though I am interested to see that usually a big literary credibility project like this gets a lot of award nominations, but the only Academy Award it got... a nomination for Al Pacino in Supporting Actor.
Really? I think Jack Lemmon is great in it. Having seen him in lots of other things as well, he genuinely can act, that guy. You know, just the way this character he creates, such a weasel. Who should be... you know, it's Jack Lemmon. He should be very compelling. Anyway, I'll stop going round in circles. But ultimately, I think you've taught me round to not liking the film.
This is a new least favourite film for Room the Memes, as far as I'm concerned. But
okay.
But I'm still glad to have watched it. So
it didn't outstay as well. Well, I suppose it did within 5 minutes for you. I'm glad to have watched it again without the... This is a very awkward watch vibe that I had the first time round. I do appreciate the acting, and it is quite quotable, but I think you've ultimately convinced me if it's trying to say something about that, it should just come on and say it.
Still.
But there we are. Well, thank you, David Mamet. More Please, no. That's, I don't think we'll say that. But all right, well, let us retire from this very hot episode and return anon.